This episode of AVXL is recorded on September 20th, 2018. Let's talk Cedia, people. So many awesome speakers, 4K projectors from Epson, JVC, and Sony. And I gotta say, Digital Projection had the best demo video I have ever seen. Not a single soaring eagle, but I digress. It's all coming up on AVXL.
Testing 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I am Robert Herron.
True.
Yes, man. ID and passport ready to go.
Oh, my goodness. So been a couple weeks since we recorded. I apologize.
I know.
I had a big subwoofer conversation with Brent Butterworth, and we're having some production issues with that because I tried a new production tool, which may have been a big toolish mistake, but we'll figure that out this week, hopefully.
Tooled by the tool.
If you don't know Brent Butterworth, he writes about subwoofers and speakers and headphones. He's part of the crew at the Wirecutter. Fantastic human being, and has taught me more about subwoofers than I would have ever learned anywhere else. But I digress, because we should probably talk about IFA, which in some ways I think seems to be the new Cedia and Cedia. It's just a lot of stuff. It seemed like LG and Samsung were lobbing shots at each other about 8K screens in preparation for maybe giving us some pricing and ship date information.
I always look at IFA at CES in Berlin as the predecessor for the TV folks to show off their newest gear. And they're going to introduce something the equivalent of, say, a flagship. That'll be either coming out later the same year, or it'll be something they're going to highlight at the, in this case, the 2019 Consumer Electronics Show later in Vegas.
Right.
And in this case, we had already talked about the TVs that Samsung had announced in terms of their 8K QLED TVs, but we didn't mention anything about LG showing off an 88-inch 8K OLED. And one of the reasons I didn't bring it up initially is that there's no pricing or availability or anything about this. It was more of a technology demo compared to what Samsung was showing off in terms of, hey, it's a shipping product you're going to be able to buy in the next month or so. Now, one of the things, though, that's kind of interesting about the differences between the 8K demos between LG and Samsung was that Samsung showed off an array of screen sizes. Mm-hmm. I believe from 55 on up to 80, 88, something, you know, in the 80s. So, and they're showing effectively final products in the sense that, hey, put down the credit card and you can buy these today. Or, you know, at least pre-order right now. Now, in the case of LG, I think it's going to be significantly difficult for them to do an 8K panel at smaller sizes, simply because of how the pixels themselves are formed. It's generally speaking, it's way easier for the LCD folks to scale resolution in terms of picture size. And that has a lot to do with simply the fact that the color filter and things like the LCD cells themselves, or the liquid crystal cells, I should say, within the LCD panel, those are really well-known pieces of technology that have been scaled to a variety of sizes. You look at like the density of modern cell phones, and they can be incredibly dense either with LCD or OLED technology. Mm-hmm. Now, in this case, though, when it comes to manufacturing the large format OLEDs, my initial impression is that it's going to be insanely difficult to drive 8K OLEDs at, say, 55-inch size. I think it's going to have a lot to do with simply the power consumption of these TVs. I think it's going to require more power to drive more pixels rather than, say, what you have in the case of LCDs being a more fixed light source, in the sense, less dynamic in the sense that you're dealing with a separate backlight compared to what you're seeing on the screen in terms of the light coming out. Whereas with OLED, it is each pixel is an illuminating piece of material. It will be super interesting to see going forward whether or not LG can actually get 8K something into the realm of affordability, maybe a 77-inch panel or a 65-inch panel, ideally. Is it necessary? This is going beyond the whole discussion about, you know, resolution and what's necessary per se.
Right.
I have no problem with resolution increases. It does require, you know, additional components to make sure that scaling can keep up and make everything look great. But for me, the absolute number of pixels isn't so great of a concern. Although at 88 inches, I think I would prefer 8K of resolution compared to 4K. Still, That's just one of the things.
Depending on how close you're sitting to it.
Yeah, I think so. I definitely see differences at 4K. You can. I think anybody can see the difference, even at reasonable distances, like say 10 to 12 feet away on a 65-inch panel. Running 1080p and 4K content side by side, the same content, I think most people would be able to see those differences. They're not night and day, but they are there. And if you ask someone to say, hey, which picture looks more detailed,
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people would be able to spot that difference. More resolution, smaller pixels, but can LG do reasonably sized and affordable 8K panels compared to Samsung and their 900FN series that's arriving soon with any size you want, pretty much, I think from 55 on up. We'll see. This also kind of brings me back to why plasmas died. They never hit a 4K panel with a plasma display because it required so much more electricity to drive that many more pixels compared to other technologies that were more energy efficient, like LCD. That was one of the reasons plasma went away, was that the size and scaling issues there were quite challenging, and to the point where they're like, 1080p, maybe 65 inches, that's about it.
Are you excited? Or is this just kind of like the preliminaries?
For me, it's for at least with LG, it's more of a technical prowess thing. Mm-hmm. Can they actually produce a 65-inch 8K panel at a reasonable price and something that doesn't require, 1,000 watts of electricity to drive? Those are my questions. And if they can do it, hey, more power to them. But there's no sign of that. And there's no sign of it scaling any smaller than the current 88-inch demo.
Right. I don't know.
Just a quick follow-up.
I'm torn between wanting to be really impressed by 8K and realizing the most impressive thing I've seen out of 8K demos has been the HR, or maybe that I can stand with my eyeball a centimeter from the, screen and barely see the pixels. Oh my goodness. There was a lot of 4K and 8K at Cydia.
Oh my goodness. Man, that Epson Pro Cinema 4050.
Yeah. Let's talk about the thing that is actually within reach of most people, right?
Going from 88-inch 8K OLED, if I had to guess a price, that's about $40,000.
An eye-searing 40K. So Epson Pro Cinema, they had on display. They also announced its companion consumer product, the 4010, a few days ago. DCI-P3 color.
100%, they're claiming.
1080p resolution. You were saying the specs kind of suggest 2x1080p. It's 3LCD.
Yep.
Like a 3-chip, 3LCD design. They're doing pixel shifting, but one of the things I noticed in the demo that really stood out for me is there was no smear. There was a lot of detail. And as I was talking to some of the folks there, they basically, one of the things they said is they took the pixel shifting from a sine wave, where you were mostly waiting for the pixel to change, to more of a square wave, where you spent less time waiting for the pixel to switch and more time actually watching the information you want to see displayed on each pixel. So the idea that they were transitioning the pixels faster and that was giving them a crisper, more detailed image. Because they were doing a couple interesting things. One of their more higher-end projectors they were demoing against Sony's previous $8,000 projector, which I think is now a $10,000 projector. We'll get to that in a minute. Crazy, crazy, crazy rig, right? So
I think this is my go-to pick if you're looking for something that will be compatible with 4K and provide P3 color, which is what is used for all your HDR streaming, your 4K UHD movies. Color for me is just as important. And having the resolution, maybe you could call it 3K
instead of
4K. I
think HDR is probably more important than resolution, but...
Definitely. And the color space, too, just to be able to support that. There aren't many projectors out there that exceed Rec. 709.
Yeah.
And having something in this realm of $2,400 for the 4050 and $2,000, they're saying, for the 4010.
Yeah.
With likely street pricing on that 4010 being...
I hear $1,800.
Yeah. That would be really hard for me to point someone elsewhere unless they've got the cash to spend.
And we'll put that into perspective in a second. But this was, it looked really good. Like, this is the first time I've been in a demo and been like, I'd really like some of this 4K stuff in my house. And at $1,800, my wife will still beat me half to death with a hammer. But it's not, we're not talking about a $6,000, an $8,000, $15,000, dollar projector.
No.
I said they're using 12-bit processing. It outputs 10-bit. They're doing the processing in 12-bit to get some better HDR. 5,000 hours lamp life. They're figuring typical. The entire DCI color space is going to work in digital cinema mode only. They also have dynamic, bright, natural, black and white.
I am curious to know if they're using a separate set of color filters for that, the way JVC does, in terms of when you switch between, you know, the wide color palette versus right. the standard HD color palette. You actually hear a mechanical shift within the projectors right. of JVC as it switches to the tighter filters to enable that super saturated color. In this case, I don't know. Either it is in one mode and then it's simply scaling all the color up and down accordingly, or they're actually doing something similar. And
yeah.
For that, though, and that price point, it is just fantastic. I guess the 4010 ends up sacrificing an extra lamp in the box, and you have a white case instead of a black case.
Yeah, you get a white case instead of a black. One, you subtract $400.
Yeah.
You go from a black case to a white case. The pro installer version comes with an extra bulb, an extra year of warranty.
That is kind of nice.
It is kind of nice.
And I prefer a black case for a projector for whatever reason. One of the few times.
Depends on the ceiling it's going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, that's true too.
What's really cool is you know, the three-axis precision motor is buried into this thing. 2.1x zoom, like up to 96% horizontal and up to 47% vertical lens shift, 10 preset positions.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That's one of the benefits of jumping out of, say, that sub $1,000 projector to something like this.
I'm also laughing because, like, the
optics.
Screen you would want to use for this, if you were setting up like a custom screen that was going to mask itself for 4x3 or CinemaScope or whatever, that screen's going to cost more than this projector, but
probably
all glass lens, both the 4050 and the 4010.
96% horizontal lens shift is that's more than that's almost able to move it a full frame. Left or right.
You can screw up pretty badly on the mounting, yet not screw up the image.
It's flexible. Generally, you never want to take any of those controls, be it a zoom function or a lens shift function, and crank it to max.
Yeah.
You do end up sacrificing some light output. And as you move, say, lens shifting in, say, a horizontal direction, you're sacrificing the remaining capability of a vertical lens shift as well. So it's not like you can take both of those to 100%.
Right.
They kind of balance each other out, but still.
Man,
motorized lenses, too, for doing nice critical focusing.
Yeah.
It's so much easier to stand. Well, if you're doing it by yourself, anyway, standing right next to the screen, perceiving the detail while you make these fine adjustments. And that's just freaking awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. Oh, my goodness. JVC is, depending on how you count, is releasing either 3 or 6 native 4K projectors. They basically have the consumer and the installer models.
Oh, that's true. That is one difference in their lineup.
DLA NX5 / DLA RS1000, that's $6,000, 1,800 lumens. The rate and the contrast in that is 40,000 to 1 native, 400,000 to 1 dynamic, 18 gigabit HDMI 2.0 inputs, and all glass lens. Oh, I should point out, I was kind of giggling as I do when I'm reading in the forums. AVS forums, some people were really torqued that the Epson projectors only have HDMI 1.4A, which is like 10.2 gigabits per second, not 18 gigabits per, not the, you know, the
right.
So you're talking about like 4K, 60 hertz, but not HDR for the Xbox and PS4. And a lot of people are really complaining it's going to be problematic for HDR gaming.
That could be. That is definitely something to keep an eye on as we await the release and review.
Oh my goodness. The JVC DLA NX7 / DLA RS2000 is going to run you $8,000, bumps the lumens up to 1900. I would say these are conservative ratings on the lumens. 80,000 to 1 claimed native contrast ratio. And that's adding in that JVC auto iris.
Nice. You know,
their dynamic contrast claim is 800,000 to 1. And it's getting the same color filter as the NX9. So they're basically claiming beyond DCI P3 for the color gamut, and that they're sort of a step closer to being ready, or they're more ready than most projectors will be for BT2020 content. The DLA NX9 is going to be selling for, brace for impact, $18,000. It's the same imagers. As the NX5 and NX7, but it adds e-shift pixel shiftings, so it'll give you a faux 8K, 100mm 18-element lens, 2200 lumens, 100,000 to 1 native contrast. Let me say that again. 100,000 to 1 native contrast.
The black level on JVC projectors is what you compare other projectors to.
Yeah. you know, they were running an 8K video that had been rendered to 4K and then was being scaled by the DLA NX9 up to 8K. You know, all of these are ISF certified. They support HDR10 and HLG, shipping in November. And then the DLA X790/RS540 or the 540 is most normal people would read that number. That's a 1080p projector. It's going to drop in price from 6 to 4K.
That's excellent. I've set up a couple of those, and those are fine, yeah. fine pieces of hardware that give you that wide color palette. And sure, the resolution is just 1080p, but otherwise, it's the same JVC mm-hmm. quality for the optics. And that damn color is really yeah. what gets me. And if you pair that with somebody who can calibrate them, especially using JVC's software,
right?
They are reference quality. It is just
nothing wrong with a little
reference fantastic.
Quality.
Usually, when you pay more for the JVC projectors, they have some additional features too, like ISF and THX certifications and some other cool stuff like that. But otherwise,
you know, something else that I just realized: people were calling out on the AVS forum about the Epson. No HLG, no Dolby Vision, no HDR10 Plus. Not that really anybody's got HDR10 Plus support right now, but
Samsung does.
Okay, Samsung does. Okay, point taken.
Oh, and probably Panasonic.
I sit corrected. Projectors?
No. This is strictly for their TVs, in particular, going forward.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Sony, the VPL VW295ES, which just rolls off the tongue, that's going to replace that 2017 VPL VW285ES. That is a native 4K projector, 1500 lumens. They got a new 4K processor, which I think is going to do something big for the black levels on that, 18 gigabit per second HDMI inputs. Sony also said there will be a big reduction in input lag for 4K gaming, HDR10 and HLG compliant. It's going to ship in October. And then the VW285ES is being dropped down to $4,000. Stepping up, the prices are getting big. The VPL VW695ES, it's going to be selling for 10K, 1800 lumens. That replaces the VW675ES, includes Sony's advanced iris dynamic aperture. They're claiming a 350,000:1 dynamic. They didn't give us a static contrast ratio. The 2000 lumen VPL VW885ES is still $25,000 and is not being replaced. However, mm-mm. if you have the big money, the long green, the VPL VW995ES replaces the VPL VW1100ES. It's going to cost you $35,000. And if you bought a VW1100ES, prepare to be pissed because the VW995ES is using lasers instead of lamps. They're claiming 2200 lumen output, and it gets the ARCF lens from the $50,000 VW5000.
That's the sweet thing about Sony projectors. They've yeah. had native 4K for a few years now. Price-wise, sure. Those are all premium-sounding projectors. The nice thing is jumping up to that 695ES from the 295ES, at least, it gives you the dynamic iris, which can... if it works properly, which I think Sony does a pretty good job with this, it can really help improve the dynamic range of content when it shifts from bright scenes to dark scenes and things like that. I am most curious to see what the color measurements are on Sony projectors. They do not claim to use, I mean, at least they don't talk about it much, but they don't seem to be using similar filters the way JVC does,
right.
or separate filters in order to achieve a wider color palette. They use what they generally call their triluminous system. I'll be really curious to see how close any of these new projectors come to wrangling something close to DCI-P3 color. Because that color is super important to me. It's something I notice. It's just in terms of this new experience with these new formats. For me, the color is critical. You're able to see more of the color you can see looking out the window in
right.
terms of especially anything saturated or super rich. It's just it makes a world of difference. It's nice to see.
It is nice to see.
Yeah.
So Sound United, which is Denon and Marantz and Definitive, and I'm sure I'm forgetting someone, Class A. They had the AVR X6500H, the 4500H, or the X4500H, the Marantz AV7705. And I'm just going to quote the press release. We are excited to be introducing the industry's first IMAX Enhanced Ready 4K AV receivers and the industry's first IMAX Enhanced Ultra HD AV Surround Preprocessor. Well, they will be after a firmware update anyhow.
Software.
What is IMAX Enhanced, you're asking? Oh, well, remember THX? Remember when people looked for THX certified equipment?
Still do.
It still exists. Monoprice has some THX certified speakers. IMAX has decided to create IMAX Enhanced, which is, you know, a branding, marketing, quality of experience spec.
We've looked at your gear and we bestow upon it the stamp on the forehead of IMAX Enhanced.
Smells just like THX.
It does, but one nice thing, if you're interested in this, you can check out imaxenhanced.com. When anything is labeled as this, it's going to be incorporating some advanced DTS audio technology, which was in this press release prominently mentioned, and they're calling it a special variant of the DTS:X codec technology. Now, the IMAX Enhanced gear will include things like your televisions, projectors, soundbars, and AV receivers. The companies on board, including the ones Pat just mentioned, Sony Electronics, Sony Pictures, Paramount Pictures, and Sound United, which is Denon and Marantz. I have no problems with any of this. If somebody's going to take the time to make sure that the content and the gear can all play better together and produce as good of an experience as possible, the branding almost means nothing to me. I guess we'll wait and see. Will you be able to do a side-by-side for the non-IMAX enhanced, the regular 4K Ultra HD experience versus, say, IMAX enhanced? No problem, though. I mean, I think it's good that at least some manufacturers will be taking a look at all of their gear and how it plays together, and including some of the companies that make the content, and to really thoroughly go through it and optimize it as such. I'm more curious just to see how many of these movies actually get like an IMAX enhanced logo on them or something beyond, you know, your standard, hey, it's a 4K Ultra HD disc or streaming content or wherever it may be coming from.
I suggest you'll be seeing those titles from Sony and Paramount.
It appears that way. They're on board. Sony's got both ends covered there. They're taking care of the display systems, probably their audio products as well, in addition to their picture studio. So yeah, that's looking pretty good.
So, props to the crew at Denon and Marantz and IMAX. Digital projection, gorgeous as always. If you have the money, this is a company that will always be way out of my reach, at least new. You might be picking up that I'm edging into my "I was awed by this demo" voice.
All right.
Because they had their InSight Laser 8K demo. And to put this into perspective, this was a box big enough for my dog to sleep in, running multiple lasers. Actually, the phrase I have written down in my notes is, quote, "Multiple lasers hammer 25,000 lumens through 7680 by 3320 pixels of resolution." They were doing the demo on a 220-inch screen. And the demo was, imagine a Japanese paper lantern.
Yeah.
Now, imagine one built by Hitachi for some sort of parade or festival,
right,
that's, say, 30 feet on a side.
Oh, okay.
And maybe 8 or 10 feet high.
Yeah.
And has like 50 people underneath it in the dark.
Put a propane tank in it.
Moving it around.
Float it around.
Well, they were holding it, right? Okay. And the demo, the colors were unreal because it was like some sort of Japanese warrior god battling this incredibly bluish white paper dragon, and there was a bright orange tiger, and there was another dude over here, and I'm pretty sure there was a sword. And it was one of those moments where you're just like, the colors were exquisite, but you're going from the like, oh my god, look at the dragon, to oh my god, I can see the detail of the bodies because it's this super bright thing in the center of the frame. And then everything around that was basically night. So there's a little bit of light illuminating the people, the 40 or 60 people that are holding this float up. And it's just this one of those moments where you're like, yeah.
25,000 lumens.
HDR, yeah.
That would be just about perfect for if you're going to set up like a small theater house or something. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a few hundred seats. That would just be That'd be a nice thing to add to your business.
Yeah, it would be.
That would get me to show up and watch movie
goodness.
Night.
Oh,
I'm curious, though. Chances are this is just a blue laser-based system running through a phosphor material to generate the white light. Even at these price points, we're talking, you know, upwards of $300,000-$400,000 for something like this. I would really like to see somebody put out an RGB laser at that price point. And I'm wondering what the delay is.
You know,
is it literally just cost?
It might be cost. It might be the engineering. It might be. It's always blue. Blue is always the problem, right? But Oh, my goodness. Something that Sound and Vision called out about 8K projectors, and they were specifically talking about the DLA NX9, the RS3000 from JVC. They pointed out that it's not actually compatible with 8K input because the silicon to do HDMI 2.1 for 8K doesn't actually exist yet. So before you spend $18,000 or $300,000, you might want to see if there's an upgrade path to do true 8K input. We don't have any idea when actual 8K content is going to be distributed or how it's going to be distributed. So, you know, you might want to just think a little forward.
4K is going to look dandy on that.
For a long time. Projector Central has a great wrap-up, their CDA 2018 Top Projector Report. And if you're wondering what we mean by faux K or mock K, mock 4K, there's a good read at Projector Central, true 4K versus faux K. It's a nice explainer in case we haven't beaten that to death in the podcast for you. Kaleidoscape. I haven't seen Kaleidoscape in forever because I kind of stopped paying attention when Kaleidoscape, well, like, it was like the transition from DVD to Blu-ray.
Right.
And Kaleidoscape was a system that would take your DVDs, you would feed them into the Kaleidoscape box, it would sort of suck the video data off that, store it on their server, and then you would access it. This is very much like a system that Robert built for himself over a score of years.
Yeah.
Ripping titles first off a DVD and then to Blu-ray that was built on Windows.
This is like a turnkey solution where you literally can have that same experience, but just on a very well-crafted piece of hardware.
Yeah.
And the software to make it all work great.
Yeah, they've got like the Terra servers. The Strato C is kind of their entry-level box at like $3,500. The Strato S probably is what... The Strato C would be kind of like their equivalent to an Apple TV or a Plex box. If anybody there hears me say that, they're probably never going to speak to me again. But it's looking at this. This is one of those demos. What I didn't know is that they are now doing all of... They are now actually encoding their own content, right? Or they're getting like mezzanine files from the studios. They're doing 4K encoding. So they are actually selling movies to be played back on the Stratos. On the Kaleidoscape systems, right? You know, so they're getting like 4K HDR. When you buy a title, it's good for a license across like 5 different systems.
Nice.
So, you know, if you have a Kaleidoscape rig at the house and you have a Kaleidoscape rig at the beach house and you have a Kaleidoscape rig at the chateau up in the Alps, you know what I mean? You can buy it once and watch it in multiple locations. Although at that point, if you have all those homes, you can probably afford to buy multiple copies, but you don't have to. Yeah, you know, so once you buy, if you buy like a 4K version, like the lower resolution versions are included for free if they're available. These are really serious. They're really, the video quality, the menus themselves and what they call scripts are just amazing. And
I love their interface above all else. And
that's really what I'm not saying well, so you might want to.
No, it's that and it makes crafting a system like this, it literally, they do all the work for you. So it's like, here, once it's integrated, it then literally becomes a wall of content for you just to browse and select and explore.
The covers view.
Yeah.
And you can dynamically shift, like you can get movies lists, you can go through, titles, directors, you can pull,
with perfect quality.
Yeah,
I mean, from either 4K sources or maybe even better with these, studio transfers that they're able to do in certain cases. That to me is just that adds to what you get out of it. And, I know plenty of people who have just I have a hard drive full of movies I've downloaded or somebody handed me and I just plug that into my TV and I can watch those files. Sure. Yeah. That's a super affordable way to do it. But in terms of having like... For an epic home theater system, particularly on large format projectors, where you really want, and you're rolling, say, the 4K imaging experience, incredible audio, and you just want a painless source of content in the best quality possible.
Right.
It's like your own personal freaking Netflix, in a sense.
Yeah, and it's Netflix and also...
Of stuff you want that you might not be able to get anywhere else anyway.
Yeah, and so, I mean, we're looking like 60 gigabytes plus per movie, 100 megabit per second in codes on the 4K. They can run scripts. So you could create like I'm going to watch like a couple of movies or a short and then the feature, and it'll also do lighting triggers. And it will, you can actually do things like once the end credit comes up, it'll like slowly raise the lights and close the curtain.
It's clean up your crap and leave.
Yeah. Thank you for attending this wondrous 4K 60 frames per second, HDR10, Dolby Vision not currently supported or not supported on the current hardware.
Interesting. That's hopefully something they'll add this year.
Hopefully. It was just, you know, the amount of content and, you know, the collections,
although like
the
I
ease
just mentioned,
of buying movies.
If you are dealing with a projector, then Dolby Vision doesn't mean anything anyway.
Right.
So, at least for the time being.
You know, they've got a pretty slick child remote for kids.
That is something else they focused on in the last year or so. I think we previewed some of that at CEDIA last year.
Yeah.
It's like Netflix Kids, but this is the exactly the content you want.
Yeah, well, it's Netflix Kids, like they're like, it's child-friendly. And what it does is it is, to a certain degree, all child content. But you have no ability to be like, okay, like if
not
my
that.
Child watches Wow Wow Wubsy, he's going to be bouncing off the ceiling for the next 2 hours. So like my child, like I love Seamus, but I'll never let him watch, you know, Wubsy again, at least until some point where he can see it without turning into, you know, the Tasmanian devil.
Oh, yeah.
And this actually gives you legitimate, like, my kid can play these titles.
Yes.
You know, it locks the kid out. Like if the kid uses the kid remote, they don't have access to your collection of, you know, terrifying cinema that will, you know, cause their brain to collapse. And
they've also, Kaleidoscape's been really good about, if you have a collection, you've been hoarding the 4K movies and the Blu-rays and things like that, you can then incorporate that all into just a beautiful digital interface that makes it, you know, easy for you to roll that kind of a system. Granted, you're paying for it, but at the same point, it's everyone I know
you're
who has
like
one and uses them just loves it.
$8,000 for a 24 terabyte Tera server, I think like $13,000 for a 40 terabyte Tera server. You know, but it is, I mean, if you've got the money for a 6 terabyte Stratus S, which is going to be about $4,500, it's going to be pretty freaking amazing. And I guess it would be probably $4,500 plus the installation and the setup and the integration with your other home stuff. But I just wanted to shout out because I just was really, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something I always look at and it's like, damn, this is nice.
And it doesn't require the 72,000 hours of work you did to put together your system running on Windows.
Yeah, I love working within Windows.
Oh my goodness.
Maintenance.
Definitive Technology just got the pick as the soundbar choice from the Wirecutter.
Wow.
And I should point out, I've got a friend of mine works over there, so take anything I say at the moment with a grain of salt, except don't, because if it's good enough for the Wirecutter, it's probably good enough for you.
Very cool, though.
Yeah, no, it was you know, the Definitive W Studio Micro is now the best soundbar. And they kind of consolidated their soundbar recommendations over at the Wirecutter.
Cool.
But, you know, it's a pretty slick setup, but they also just updated the Studio Advance, which is like $1,300, the Studio Slim. They're Chromecast enabled. They include wireless subwoofers. The Slim is like 3.2 with like 4 little 3-inch oval drivers and 3 aluminum tweeters with an 8-inch sub. And then the Studio Advance is a 5.1 system that does surround sound. And it's got 6 of the 3-inch drivers on that, so it's going to be giving you a little more oomph on the low end.
Huh.
HDMI ARC, 4K HDR support, 1-button EQ for like movies and music and night. That's pretty. I'm pretty glad that they're doing Chromecast on those. I'm kind of falling in love with Chromecast audio.
I hear you.
But it's interesting to watch as soundbars keep getting better, and especially the surround sound option for soundbars. I still want big fat speakers. But they're really, if you don't have the money or the time or the spousal approval, first of all, divorce him. Second of all, you know, a soundbar is still a huge step up from the speakers inside of your television.
That just sounds well done.
Yeah. Bowers & Wilkins demoed their updated 600 series speakers. Brand new woofer, brand new tweeter. They moved the ports from the front to the back now. They did a really, really amazing side-by-side demo with the previous gen. Like, the specs read the same, but You know, they've got a lighter material, a much more powerful motor, and I think they increased the X-Max on the woofer, so it has a lot more low-end impact than the previous Model 600s. I would love to get a pair of those into demo. They were really impressive.
Sweet. Sounds like they did a good massage job on their previous line and said, we can take something we're pretty familiar with and make it better.
Hey, I think this went from straight from the massage to, like, the bionic gym because, you know, a pretty radical change in especially at the low end on that speaker. ELAC was there. They had their Vertex series on wall system. The wireless speakers we saw back at CES are now called the Navis wireless speakers. They're definitely gunning for Kep's LS50 wireless. Unlike the LS50 wireless, which is this kind of standard for wireless streaming performance, it does DSP and all sorts of other stuff and streaming. These are basically powered speakers, and you'll need an additional box to run the signal into these because they're basically like, we don't want to do DSP. If you want to do that, you can figure it out, but we're going to give you a really amazing pair of Class D amplifiers and some really, you know, badass drivers.
Yeah, we're not going to fight with our clients over their DSP choices.
No.
Paradigm, just do what you
want. Yeah, be happy. Paradigm's, you know, but the LS50 is like, you know, you basically, you set those up and you stream to them and you can do whatever you want. There's a subwoofer out.
Are the ones that also have the aren't they like studio monitors?
Yeah, they can also be studio monitors, yeah.
It's just like,
they're really impressive.
You have a nice desk?
Yeah.
Throw a couple of those on there to really make that a nice desk.
Yeah. I got a friend of mine who was like, you know, sitting at somebody's house and they were comparing, like, I want to say it's $2,200 a pair for the LS50 wireless and comparing that to like $40,000 worth of stereo gear. And they were kind of looking at each other and being like, why did I spend the extra $37,000 or whatever it was? Because there was a subwoofer in there too. Speaking of subwoofers, Paradigm's new Defiant subwoofers run from like 8 to 15 inch models. They also had a really, I'm going to use the word sick, in wall / in ceiling demo of a Paradigm 7.2.4 system. They were demoing Ready Player One and Blade Runner 2049 on Ultra HD Blu-ray with Dolby Atmos sound. Something, as Paradigm points out, you rarely get to hear it firsthand because most dealers can't actually build a room within walls. And it was a pretty badass system. You know, 4-channel Atmos is pretty bomber.
That is a good point. I don't know of any place locally where I can go and listen to a variety of in-wall designs.
Yeah.
In an effective setup.
And in-wall ceilings. I mean, you could say like, well, you know, your local Magnolia does, but those rooms are so rarely well configured and the speakers are often in odd spots.
True.
That Paradigm system, it was 3 CI Elite E7 LCR in-wall speakers. Those are $3,500 each. 4 E3 LCR surrounds. Those are $2,000 each. 4 E80R in-ceiling speakers, that's $700 each, and a pair of Defiant X15 subwoofers for the boom. I could do the math on that, but it's you know, it's a pretty nice
less
used
than 40
car.
Grand,
yeah. But it was pretty bomber. Anthem's a sister company to Paradigm and Martin Logan. They were running all those speakers off an AVM60 preamp and processor. That's $3,000 and an MCA525. It's a 5-channel, 225-watt, at least in the 8-ohm amplifier, plus like an MCA325, maybe two of those. Those are 3-channel, 225-watt amplifiers. That was a lot of amplification. There was no lack of power
setup
in that. Yeah. I will never be able to afford one, but I just want to give a shout out to the giant meters on Anthem's STR power amp, which is also a beast, like 400 watts into 80 or 8 ohms, 600 watts into 4 ohms. They're very pretty. Martin Logan had their mystery display, as in, listen to this demo, but we won't tell you what you're listening to.
Oh, great.
Well, you know, I always think of Martin Logan as
so
making
mysterious,
these incredible electrostatic speakers, but I didn't realize they sell a ton of their subwoofers and their Motion Series speakers, which are built around Air Motion Transformer tweeters.
Oh, nice.
Like, I want to go find a local Martin Logan dealer that'll let me sit in a room for a half an hour and listen to some stuff.
Heck yeah.
It was pretty impressive. Buddy of mine, Michael O'Neill over at beginneraudiophile.com, and if you like vintage Porsches, Wrench is a new thing he's starting, was weeping. All right, Mike doesn't actually weep, but, well, maybe he does, but probably not over speakers, but McIntosh's new in-wall speaker demo. They also had some really, really pretty, their MI-254 and MI-1000 128, like a 4x250 watt and an 8x120 watt amplifiers. The speakers are using the same 2-inch mid ranges and 3/4-inch tweeters from the Mikintosh XR50 and XR100 home speakers. Emotiva is finally going to ship their RMC1 preamp/processor/tuner. That's November 15th. This is the ship date on that. We were talking about this last year at Cedia.
So I'm trying to find that one device that'll just drive all the speakers in the room.
It's pretty out of control.
With the decoding for that, for the formats I want to enjoy.
So
Atmos and others.
11.5.8, that's like 24 channels.
Holy cow.
It'll do Dolby Atmos surround sound. It's $5,000, which sounds like a lot until you look at some competing products.
Wait, like five subs it supports?
Well, so it's, yeah, it's like, it's 9.6, like, 9.1.6 out of the box.
Okay.
Then there's, you can buy like up to three extra back chassis XLR modules. That'll get you to the full 24 channels for the 11.5.8.
Gotcha.
All the channels are fully assignable, they're saying. So you can use any channel for any function. You want 8 subwoofers? Great. You want 22 subwoofers? Great. Buy the box, buy the extra 3 XLR modules, have 22 subwoofers in your room.
Most of your premium AVRs go up to 11 channels.
Right.
This gives you that room, or if like you
this
really...
This is 24 channels max.
Yeah, if you want to double
be like
that up.
6,500, 7,000 by the time you get to that. 8 HDMI 2.0B inputs, so obviously 4K is happily supported. They're going to have a significantly less expensive AVR coming out, I want to say in early 2019. I also want to give a shout out to their $229 A100 50 watt per channel integrated amp. It's really impressive for the money. It's really heavy, so you can also use it to mash things that attack you if you can detach it from your speaker cables in time. The only thing I really wish it had was a subwoofer out. Got a hands-on with a Sonos amp. I want one.
Ah, good.
Yeah.
That's praise right there.
Really nice. It feels really nice. It sounds really nice. We talked about
it
in depth. Well, it's stackable. The circle at the top, I guess they actually conceal the air vent into the circle on the top.
Because that's stackable. What it looked like. At first, I thought it was
rack mountable.
A sub laying on its side.
No.
No, it's not.
They have some really optional...
that's our amp, Robert.
Burly jacks for the speaker cables.
Forgive me.
This is going to be sweet if you have Sonos and you want to drive some more badass speakers. That's going to be $599 again, February to consumers, December to installers. Yamaha was demoing their Surround AI tech built into their latest Avantage AVRs. Essentially, they're doing a scene-by-scene analysis and optimizing, I want to say, the levels per channel to deliver the sort of most immersive experience they can.
Cool.
I'm really curious to hear this in a demo. Like, don't get me wrong, big fan of Dwayne Johnson, not too familiar with Rampage. However, having been a big fan of the video game Rampage, I now want to see the movie because watching the insanity of
your... Did they
make
a movie of the video game?
They did a movie. I was watching this, and I'm like watching a wolf like rip helicopters out of the sky, and all of a sudden I realized it was Rampage, the video game with
Hollywood.
Dwayne Johnson.
I hardly know ye.
Everybody needs a hobby, man. But I'm really curious to hear that actually in a room and with content I'm familiar with. They're also showing off... because turntables are the new hotness still. They're showing off their MusicCast Vinyl 500 Wi-Fi turntable. So if you have their MusicCast in-home speaker system, you can drop the needle on your favorite wax and stream it throughout your house using the MusicCast system.
The Yamaha Avantage AVRs. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. But anyway, one thing I truly love about those that particular higher end, they're more premium AVRs, and even some of their step-down models is the app that Yamaha has. You can put that on a tablet and have easy, full control over that whole system. Maybe many other manufacturers are starting to do this too, but Yamaha's app has been around for a while, and it is rock solid for doing anything from in terms of just input selection to your multi-zone audio configuration, just a couple of touches, boom, it just works. And because it's on something like a tablet, it's easier to do some customizing in terms of input naming and just to have a graphical interface beyond, the black wall of buttons on the front of most AVRs. But for everyone I've ever had to set up one of those for, anybody who looks at that app spends about 2 minutes with it, and they're suddenly very comfortable with it in terms of, just this, that, and the other, and it just works. And it's fantastic. That's just one of those little overlooked things that Yamaha does really well.
They're doing some really nice work.
Fantastic.
Those Avantage AV receivers are looking pretty slick.
Are we running out of time?
I think we are running out of time, so I'll talk really fast until you shut me down.
Monoprice
said 9 and 11 channel versions of their Monolith power amplifiers is going to be selling for $2,000 and $2,500. I believe those are still built by ATI, along with some Dolby Atmos-enabled Monolith THX-certified speakers. So those have built-in up-firing height speakers. Those are selling for $350 and $400. And they also have some new THX-certified in-wall speakers. Rune Labs, their booth, Rune Labs is kind of the audiophile streaming software for your music collection. It's a front end for Tidal. They're going to be adding Sonoworks TruFi, which essentially they've been testing headphones, and their idea is they're going to turn your headphones, whether it's a cheap $40 headphone or something top of the line from a major, Mr. Speakers or Odyssey, and they're going to make it sound like what they heard in the studio. So they're basically doing some pretty sophisticated EQing on that. Or as they put it, by knowing the acoustic properties of most popular headphones, we can apply correction using our patented technology. I got a license for that. I'm going to review that ASAP.
Oh, cool.
And of course, like, the fun thing about Rune Labs is, like, you can walk over there and it's like, oh, it's a $3,000 set of headphones hooked up to Tidal and a headphone amplifier that cost almost as much as my truck. Excellent. So, yeah. I have a Rune Labs build coming in my future, I think.
Makes me wonder if the audio... speaker or headphone manufacturers eventually are going to be coming to a point where they're using stuff like machine learning to further enhance the audio quality of the products they're selling.
There's a big conversation for us to have about that, but it's not today.
Yeah, I have to. Sorry I brought it up, actually. My brain just went down the hole, and now
no,
I'm like,
I get it, dude. It's
machine learning is being applied to everything.
Yeah,
and I'd rather the build of the device, be it a speaker or a headphone, is going to be always critical. But man, you imagine if you could just take even a crappy pair of headphones or mediocre speakers and DSP them to a point where it's like, this sounds like a $20,000 set of blah, 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 blah. Probably not to that degree.
There are certainly experiments with that.
We'll dive later.
Put that in the notes for next week, because I can link you to some stuff to read that'll cause your skull to melt with curiosity.
Implosion.
Kobuz, French company, they're pushing their high-res music streaming service. It's been around for a long time in France. The company was purchased in like 2015. They're going global. They're claiming they have the largest catalog of streaming high-res audio, like 24-bit up to 192K in the world. Also going to be taking a look at this service. They're going to be doing their hard launch at Rocky Mountain Audio Fest in October. 2 million tracks, like 130,000 albums in HD. That's, they consider anything above 1644. So anything from 2444 to 24192, and something like 40 million 16-bit 44 kilohertz tracks. They have a long list of partners that are working with them. They are the new hotness as people get, I think, more and more worried about Tidal's survival in the long term. Really curious to play around with that. I'm not a huge fan of HD res audio. I don't think it's necessary.
I agree.
But having access to it along with a massive catalog, I'm down with.
Yep.
AudioQuest had some gorgeous cable management in their booth. Because hey, they don't just offer pre-terminated cables. They're there for installers too. But they had this collection of rack-mounted equipment, and it was just total cable management prawn.
I like that.
Mantle mounts enhance their MM855 smart mount. It's like $2,000. It's a really slick automated way to get your television. You can basically keep your television above the mantle and then have it drop down to a human friendly level when you're watching it.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of TVs mounted above fireplaces of late.
Yeah, we have issues with that. But if you're going to do it, it's much better to actually do something like, and they also have a much less expensive manual one where you can pull the television down.
Totally.
And then you're not, staring up like you're in the second row of the theater. With a mantle mount, you can pull it down. So
especially
that
you if you can't
forward.
Sit far enough away. A drop-down mount is something to consider.
Absolutely. Sunbright had their Veranda outdoor TVs, like 43 inches to 75 inches, 400 nits. They're saying like 30% brighter than they've been in the past. They are weatherproof.
Okay.
They're claiming. So put it out in the, the back porch for the rainy season.
There's a lot of 400 nit. 400 or 4,000?
I think they're saying 400.
Because that's okay.
So
but I'm just like, I think for outdoor use, I always tell people it's like, just get something affordable and decent.
Yeah.
Because that way, if it breaks in a year or 2 years, who cares?
Well, I mean, they're claiming that their system is weatherproof, so you don't have to worry about Jimmy having the
true. If it needs to be exposed, where it's not under an awning or it's completely uncovered,
right?
Sure. Or if there's, you know, potential for the fun people to spray it with a hose or something, that might be worth it. Otherwise,
yeah.
I'm just like, any decent TV.
Yeah. Buy something inexpensive and wait for it to die.
Seriously. And you might be surprised. It might go for years on end and keep chugging along.
If you live where I used to live in the Outer Sunset in San Francisco or where my mom lives at the Jersey Shore, where the air is like 60% salt at any given moment, that's going to destroy your electronics in a matter of weeks or months, maybe, you know. Anywhere else, especially if you're in a particularly dry part of the country, your gear can last a long time. The plastic may disintegrate from over UV exposure, but that's a different problem.
Totally. Put an umbrella over it.
Oh, my goodness. Listener named Paul emailed us about watching an old flick in a newer format. He writes, in episode 88, you talked about checking out an old favorite movie on Blu-ray to see things that might not be visible on DVD, but it's not just video that can be a revelation. One of my favorite all-time movies is Young Frankenstein. Yes! I'm old enough to have seen it in theaters, even before VHS was a thing. I know the feeling. Early in the movie, there is a scene that begins with Gene Wilder waking up from a nightmare. He and Terry Garr then hear faint violin music in the distance. In all the VHS and DVD copies I ever owned of that movie, and there were at least three, that music was inaudible to me, at least. It seemed like Wilder and Garr were reacting to nothing. At first, I wondered if they had screwed up the sound mix for the home video. Eventually, I considered the possibility that my hearing had just paid the price for too much Van Halen. Then, however, I bought my Blu-ray copy of the movie. When I reached that scene, lo and behold, in beautiful DTS HDMA, there was some faint but clearly audible violin music. I guess the compression or limitations of earlier formats just squashed the very faint, high-frequency sound out of existence, and it needed lossless audio to be heard again.
Very cool.
I think it also needs, you know, they also have to really care about a transfer.
Yeah,
because one of the, like, some of my favorite movies, which are were considered trash then and are considered trash now, unless it's a cult hit, a studio's not going to spend a lot of money on the transfer. They're just going to be like, you know.
Pump and dump.
Pump and dump. Oh, my goodness. Evan Adams, at Evan_Adams, tweets on AVXL episode 88 talking about theaters that are too loud. I 100% agree. At Regal Movies in Fairfield, Stadium 16 absolutely ruined Dunkirk for me in their mini IMAX. I'll never go back there. Way too loud. 100% agree. I should probably talk about sort of audiophile earplugs.
Too loud experience in a movie theater in a long time, although I've been mostly going to the Dolby Cinema screens nearby. So maybe I've been lucky.
You might also be less sensitive to volume.
Could be. But nah, if it's loud, I'm super. I have enough ringing. I have enough inconsistency between left and right channels on my skull.
You know, it's cool that your gear can hit 105 decibels.
Eh.
If I'm and I actually did it in three different demos at Cedia. Pulled my earplugs out of my pulled my earbuds out of my bag and stuffed them into my ears, and that dropped the level to a point where it wasn't physically painful. Turn the volume down.
Yeah,
please. Your hearing will last longer.
100% agree.
Oh, my goodness. We'll get some more viewer questions in next week's episode. And my apologies for the delay. That's pretty much all on me this time. If you don't hate us, do us a favor. Go up to patreon.com/AVXL and become a patron of the show by applying your financial wherewithal in a subscription system. Using micropayments, you can help keep AVXL coming to your earballs each and every week.
Heck yeah.
Well, almost each and every week. AVXL.com is the website. You can find more of Mr. Robert Heron over at heronfidelity.com. You can find me at takthing.com and possibly next week, patricknorton.com, although I'm not holding my breath. I dream, though.
I am in the process of reworking my website.
Always fun.
For launch.
For launch. So much lunch.
Pending.
So much lunch.
Pending.
Oh, my goodness. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I am Robert Heron.
We'll catch you next week on AVXL.